SGA, get the ball, do work, clear it out, do what you do. You wore the mustard color sneakers. Make the mustard colors work.
All right, the dulcet tones of comedian Kevin Hart at All-Star Weekend opened us the newest edition of the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Armand Brody. Please subscribe at the SMW podcast feed on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. The NBA All-Star Game, not particularly well-received this year, but when is it ever? The reality is the NBA All-Star Game is always an opportunity for the grand festivus that is any discussion of the NBA, the airing of grievances, always and forever. I can go back 20, 30 years. It's the same discussion in 2001 as it is in 2025. Oh, the NBA, no one knows how to play. The players are lazy. The game, I haven't watched in 20 years. It's, you know, it's cliche at this point, but it certainly has been the dominant narrative about the league all season. A lot of grousing, a lot of acrimony, and a lot of the calls are coming from inside the house in the NBA as well, even from current players like Draymond Green. But when it all comes down to it, the NBA All-Star Game as a viewership property, pretty normal. Yeah, obviously the least watched or second least watched officially ever. I assure you, Nielsen out of home viewing is the only reason that that game did not hit a record low. But 4.7 million viewers for whatever that was Sunday night, pretty good, especially given the competition. And I would say the same about the Pro Bowl, 4.7 million viewers as well on ABC in January. And of course, every year, the baseball All-Star Game looks like a bigger and bigger colossus, despite numbers that are themselves in record low territory. 7.4 million last year, and that might be low for the Midsummer Classic, but it is spectacular by the standards of an All-Star Game. So nothing really notable from the NBA All-Star. Yeah, it was down double digits from last year. Given the competition, that doesn't surprise me. Given the quality of the telecast, it doesn't surprise me. The quality of the game was a little bit better in terms of competitive fire than we saw last year, but, you know, it's an All-Star Game. But the discussion about the All-Star Game is so profoundly negative. People are just angry that the NBA All-Star Game wasn't good. What a weird thing to be angry about the quality of an All-Star Game, and yet with the NBA, people are just righteously upset. As has been the case all season long, all of the fatalism about the NBA, this is the league whose ratings right now, the viewership is down 5% at least on the three major networks. I haven't seen the average with NBA TV included yet. And the All-Star Game is down 13% and still pretty decent for Sunday night on cable. Armand, what do you think about the narrative surrounding the NBA this season? I mean, it seems to me like it's gotten way ahead of the reality.
I think it's a bunch of baloney, to be honest with you. And I think we're asking the wrong questions, or we're focused on the wrong things. A lot of the conversations swirling around the NBA, it's just a lot of smoke and mirrors, and it's a lot of confirmation bias. Here's the question we ought to be asking ourselves that I'm not hearing enough of. Instead of us saying, what's wrong with the NBA, we need to be asking ourselves, is it possible that sports fans just are growing more indifferent, more callous, more lukewarm to games that don't have stakes or consequences? Maybe, just maybe, people have decided that there are other things to do because there is not much in the way of pulling me in to watch this game because there's nothing on the line. I'm not hearing that commentary. You made the point. The Pro Bowl ratings have been tanking forever. Just had a record low. Every year, Major League Baseball goes through this same conversation. Baseball is dying. Baseball is dying. And yet, they're still getting 7 million viewers for an All-Star Game. In 2024, that's about as good as you can ask for, in my opinion. But the narratives and the commentary continue to be the same. We're not asking the right questions, John. We need to be asking ourselves, maybe, is it possible that fans don't care about games that don't have consequences, that don't have stakes? Maybe that's the issue. And instead of us doing that, we want to make everything some larger social commentary, when really, All we're doing is swimming in waters that we dirtied up a long time ago. And I just think it's a bunch of baloney.
Well, I mean, I think you make an excellent point about the reality of viewership in 2025 is that just turning the game on as background noise is not something people do. They turn on, you know, whatever Twitch streamer as background noise, right? There's a lot of people who grew up turning on the baseball game as background noise. Now it's more of, I mean, it's still very passive sitting down to watch sports, but the people who used to do that passively are doing other things passively. And so you do have to have a hook. Obviously, an all-star game doesn't really have much of a hook because ultimately everybody knows it's kind of just pretend. What I will say is I suspect younger people are a little bit less curmudgeonly about the status of the NBA All-Star game because they probably don't mind the bad defense. You know, I'll be completely honest here. I'm over 35, but I've never cared about traveling. I never cared about traveling once in my life. I'm sorry. You know, to me, the fundamentals of the game do matter. I don't want to watch a game that's a complete farce, and I don't necessarily enjoy all-star games. But the complaints that we hear so much, and it's so often with the NBA specifically, but also baseball, you know, any sport where people have moved away from the old ways, I don't know how much young people care about any of that. And when I say young people, I'm including, you know, generations now that are approaching 40. So not necessarily all that young. I mean, it doesn't seem to me, based on the fact that the All-Star game still beat, you know, the Daytona 500 and SNL in 18 to 34, despite losing the overall battle significantly, it doesn't seem like the All-Star game is turning off the young audience that is kind of core to the NBA's appeal to advertisers and the networks.
Any narrative is easier to push if you leave out context. Any narrative. And what bothers me is we are so lazy as sports media folks. We're so lazy that we're so quick to attach a pre-existing narrative to a number that we see released without any sort of meat on the bone. No context, no deeper story, no digging of what's going on. Fewer people are watching All-Star games as a whole, John. They are. And so I don't want to hear this never-ending garbage about what is wrong with the NBA. Because when April comes around and we get compelling playoff series, which inevitably will happen, these kinds of conversations are going to be so far removed from us that we're not going to think about them. And it's just a cycle, man. To me, it makes me feel like, you know what, we just missed the NFL. And we need something to argue about. We need something to keep us occupied. Because for the next 7 months, we have no live NFL games. That's the way it comes across to me. But as far as the narrative itself, I'm just not with it. The All-Star game ratings were about what I expected, given the fact that they're not on a CBS or an NBC or Fox or an ABC. They're on cable television. And the fact that you had no LeBron, and the fact that you had almost 15 million people watching the Saturday Night Live 50th anniversary special, and the fact that overall All-Star games have been down. That's the context that matters more than you wanting to slap some sort of social commentary about where the NBA is as an organization. That context matters far more than your confirmation bias.
Well, you know, it's been open season on the NBA all year long, and the NBA has always had, you know, haters in excess, right? Every league deals with this sort of thing. Major League Baseball with, as you said, you know, MLB is dying every year. You know, hockey has dealt with it. And the NFL, of course, dealt with it during the Kaepernick years. But the NBA, it's much more long lasting. I mean, we were really talking about 30 years. And the only exceptions being when Michael came back in the late 90s and when LeBron was in Miami. dating back to the 93-94 season. The 93-94 season. All right, that was the year of the why the NHL is hot and why the NBA is not cover that they're reproducing right now in the narrative about the four nations. And look, you know, the NBA, this, it's a diverse array of haters, right? It's people who hate the NBA because of the league's perceived politics, or they hate the NBA on a generational level, which would be a lot of former NBA players and even some current ones kind of acting out their dislike of the changes in the game. Then there's people who maybe are advocating for their sport, like PK Subban. And so you just have this wide variety of people, all of whom are kind of being very opportunistic right now. They know the NBA is at a weaker point than it normally is, because the league is at a weaker point than it normally is. I mean, it's a transition year for the NBA. And frankly, the viewership is holding up way better than it has any right to. I can't believe viewership is down only 5% entering the second half of the season where things started out. It's a golden opportunity for people who have a problem with the league. I'm not saying that the league is in, you know, a golden age here. There's no thriving happening right now, right? The All-Star game wasn't an entertaining game, although I blame the players less for that than I do the NBA or TNT, and TNT definitely overdid the self-regard on Sunday. But, you know, as we've said, the narrative about the NBA is so far out of step with where the NBA is as a property, both as a property in terms of the TV deal that's coming up next year and even just the ratings. You know, I think it is worth noting the NBA All-Star game, very unappealing, unattractive, borderline unwatchable at times, had more viewers than that USA-Canada Four Nations hockey game the prior night. And it did that opposite much tougher competition. Now, to be clear, barely beating any hockey game is not a flattering comparison for the NBA, all right? It's not. But I do think it is worth noting, given the glowing reviews of the Four Nations hockey and the atrocious reviews of the NBA All-Star game, the NBA All-Star game still had more viewers. And by the way, it was on cable while Four Nations was on broadcast, and that's not a small thing anymore. So, it's just, I don't really know where things go from here with the NBA. I think there's going to be nothing but negative talk about the league all the way through to the NBA Finals, unless it goes 7 or something. It's mid-2000s level. I mean, it's really just the mid-2000s all over again. And realistically, that's where the NBA's been for, like I said, about 30 years. So before the mid-2000s, it's just been a constant stream of, stigmatizing the game, what's wrong with the game, and really, what's wrong with the players. And that's really one of the key differences between the ridiculous overreactions that people might have to baseball and the overreactions people have to the NBA. Because when it's the NBA, it's not just basketball. There's something wrong with these lazy players who don't care. I'm surprised we haven't started hearing people talk about, you know, father figures in their lives yet. I mean, we had a lot of that in the mid-2000s, haven't had that quite yet, although I'm sure it's coming at some point.
And I want to make this clear, John, I am not some NBA cheerleader who fiercely defends the NBA at all costs. The All-Star Game is a bad television product. It's not enjoyable to watch. I want to make that clear. I just don't have time or energy for people who only want to attach their already existing narratives, which are always negative, to this number. Because, as we've said, there's been a trend. You had 2023, which was the all-time low. You had a slight increase from last year, right, John? And then, of course, you had the low from this year, which would have been an all-time low, apples to apples, taking out the Nielsen out-of-home boost. So it is what it is at this point. What did you expect? I mean, come on. You don't even understand the rules of the thing. It's not East versus West. It's not one team versus two teams. You don't know a lot of the players. You had the rising stars a part of the thing. Nobody knows these young men. I'm sure they're great players, but the casual fan does not know these men. What did you expect? Nearly 5 million viewers on cable, not broadcast. What did you expect in 2025 with so many other things on television, including this special Saturday Night Live event with Eddie Murphy and Martin Short and all these luminaries, what did you expect? You got the number that you should have expected, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, that SNL special really hurt a decade ago, too, when it was SNL 40, and the All-Star Game was in New York. It was a really good All-Star Game that year, too. So, you know, it was to be expected.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Expected. We'll go kind of on a related tangent here, and let's talk about, if we're going to talk about people who are negative about the NBA, well, TNT comes to mind. And look, it's such an interesting set of circumstances. TNT has been a bright light for the NBA for many years. And a lot of us who are old enough to remember when Charles Barkley first got there might hesitate to be critical because it was so groundbreaking and so much fun. Basically, the first decade or so that Charles was there was so much everything that people say it was. It was the best studio show probably ever. I've not seen the NFL Today with Musburger and, you know, Jimmy the Greek, but I put the NBA on TNT the first decade with Chuck. I put the NBA on TNT behind nobody. But let's be completely honest here. Things started to change very quickly when LeBron James went to Miami, because Charles Barkley, when he first got there, he was late 30s, much younger then than LeBron is now when he first got to TNT. He was a peer of the NBA players. He was part of the game, had played in that style. And then by about 2011, the game is turning. It's not the same kind of game, and certainly not the same players. And LeBron going to Miami was kind of where we started to meet, you know, Charles on Mount Olympus, handing down decrees about, you know, what the players are doing, and more of a judgmental version of someone who ultimately had been more laid back and kind of, you know, he had his opinions. He would clash with Kobe Bryant and things like that, but he wasn't spending every single night complaining about the NBA. But that started pretty much in 2011. That's also when Shaq got there. And so kind of a double whammy. Show is still great. I like to compare it to Cheers, right? Cheers is better with Diane, but it's still great with Rebecca. Right? Inside was better before Shaq got there, but it was still good with Shaq. But what's happened over the past really 4 or 5 years in particular is that that stuff that started in 2011, where Chuck started to become a little bit more judgmental, it's kind of taking over any discussion that he has about the NBA. Chuck is just, every single time he talks about the modern game, he's angry, and it's not as good of a show as a result. And to be completely honest, it's a huge turnoff to the young audience that sustains the league. And a lot of people who aren't old enough to remember when Inside was groundbreaking and new and amazing. And the comparison that I've made on here before is Mike Milbury. Mike Milbury was someone who NHL fans, they just absolutely abhorred. And, you know, eventually he ended up losing his career over a fairly innocuous joke because people so badly wanted him off the air.
So I see this from both perspectives. I see Inside the NBA as more of a variety show with occasional basketball talk. I will say this, though. The constant Shaq sensitivity, I've got four rings, you don't have any. Give the ball to the big man, let him dominate inside. The Chuck sort of name calling. You know, there was the whole bus driver thing with Kevin Durant, and that just really went over the top and it got awkward and it was funny. Now, don't get me wrong. It was hilarious to me. But I think there was a time when Chuck was more self-deprecating and not so curmudgeonly, and it made for a more enjoyable television experience. Now, it does feel like Charles Barkley feels old. He doesn't feel as fresh. The show's been grandfathered in. You're going to watch it because it has the same effect as PTI in that way. You know, Tony and Mike, or specifically Mike, somebody's going to be called a dope. And and you just kind of deal with it because they sort of earn the right for you to put up with them, even though they may say a couple of things that make you cringe. I will say this, too, in terms of sort of bringing it back to the All-Star game for a second. The way TNT was celebrated during the game was a huge disservice to the game. It's almost like the NBA or TNT or whoever made those decisions said to themselves, well, we can't get the people to watch just on the merit of the players alone, so let's do this sort of mini funeral service for TNT. It was incredibly self-indulgent and just awkward. And I think Jaylen Brown even said something about it afterwards, about just how much air it sort of took out of the building. So you sort of put how out of touch the inside the NBA crew is sometimes. And then you sort of match that with how self-indulgent they were during the All-Star game. And it just it's made for some awkward television. So I see your point on that. And I do think you have to sort of separate it as a fan, as a casual fan. You sort of have to separate knowing that you're going to get some commentary that's going to make you cringe a bit from also being able to sort of accept and appreciate the old man get off my lawn approach. Like, you kind of just have to deal with it, like that older uncle or that grandfather. You kind of just have to deal with it. Doesn't mean it's great. Doesn't mean it doesn't make you wince sometimes, but you kind of have to deal with it. That's kind of where Inside the NBA is at this point.
Yeah, but, you know, the ultimate impact of that is that you have ESPN, which is, because of Stephen A. Smith and the Embrace Debate stuff, entirely negative about the NBA. You have TNT, that is now, at this point, I would say predominantly negative about the NBA. The league cannot have this new media rights deal start soon enough. Because, I mean, every other league has at least one network shilling for its product. Yeah. Every other league. The NBA has neither. And, you know, the other thing, too, the NBA needs people who can be authentically critical of the product. And that's a very important thing. Because right now, what you have is people who are critical because they've got beef. Chuck doesn't seem to have a lot of respect for the way LeBron and Kevin Durant have gone about their business. And that informs a lot of his opinions about their teams. He never had any respect for the way the Warriors played. And so long after it became clear that Golden State was a great defensive team, he was still saying, jump shooting teams can't win championships. I'm not able to take seriously analysis that comes from a place that is almost solely based in one's own biases. It's absurd, and it pains me a little bit to be this critical of Charles, who is a great guy, a great A1 person, who treated me personally with great respect and regard when I went to Inside and interviewed him back in 2009. He is also the only NBA player in my life whose poster I ever had on my wall. The fact of the matter is, just because I like somebody, just because I grew up, you know, enjoying their work, doesn't mean that I'm not going to just note what is obvious, which is that he's not the same guy. And probably the worst aspect of what Charles has brought to the table this season is in regards to his own contract. We are talking about somebody who created out of whole cloth a dalliance with LIV Golf in order to extract the best possible contract for himself from his employer, which he did successfully and which was his right. and now he is complaining about being in that contract. I mean, this, you know, and it's not just a couple of times that he has complained about this. He has complained about it almost every public appearance he's made, certainly on the Dan Patrick Show. So all of that, the distaste for the game, his own contract situation, he's bringing, you know, he used to call Kevin Durant Mr. Miserable. I think he's Mr. Miserable this year, and it shows, and it makes the show less enjoyable, at least to me.
So you are coming out with fire, my friend. I'll say this. I agree with much of what you said. The way he's handled TNT losing the NBA, it has been uncomfortable. It has been awkward. And many times Chuck has crossed the line. When he announced his quote-unquote retirement on NBA TV, nobody believed him when he said that. And everybody thought, as you've tracked and as Brian Curtis of The Ringer has tracked, Chuck has done this many, many times. And next thing you know, you look around, he's got a new contract. You do at some point want the man to just stop talking about all the behind-the-scenes stuff. We know what's going on. We know there was a lot of legal stuff happening behind the scenes. We know that's been a painful process, not being sure of whether or not a lot of the folks at TNT were going to have a job. We understand that. But what good does it do anybody for you to constantly go out publicly on radio shows and TV shows and podcasts? What good does it do you to constantly air all this dirty laundry before the world? It's been very awkward. I do agree with you on that. But here's the deal. It's not going to change. And they're going to go over to ESPN, and it's going to be the greatest NBA studio show ESPN has ever had, because our show ain't watching it now with the folks they have there. And so, once again, you just kind of have to deal with it, because they are the kings. And Shaq, Ernie, Kenny, and Chuck, they're the masters. And they're going to continue to do this as long as they want to do it, because everybody knows that even though the show may not be at its peak level, I'm particularly partial to the sort of mid to late 2000s when Chris Webber was a part of the crew. That was probably my favorite crew. Even though it's not that, it's still a whole lot better than anything ESPN's going to pump out there. And I'll say this, too, before we wrap this up. NBC has an opportunity to make some noise here. They've got Carmelo Anthony. Amazon has an opportunity to make a star out of Blake Griffin and a star out of Dirk Nowitzki. Maybe this is their time, right? We don't have to be the new Chuck. Draymond Green, I'm not quite sure what he's doing being on TNT and saying that on a scale of 1 to 10, the product is a 0. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. You're a player in the league. It's your league as well. You're active, and you have a part to play in what the product's going to look like. So instead of going on TNT and bashing your own product, of which you are currently a part, why don't you just try to find some ways to contextualize things and then go out there and play in such a way that it gives people more incentive to watch the product? But that was a little tangent. But they're the kings. Ernie, Shaq, Kenny, Chuck, they're the kings. And this is an opportunity for new talent to rise up, because I do think the NBA needs people who can be balanced. You don't have to be a Dick Vitale level cheerleader of the league. At the same time, you don't have to be an old curmudgeon who can't find anything good. You have to have a balance. Those are the best analysts. Celebrate the game, but call things out when they need to be called out.
So, you know, look, they're going to be an improvement over ESPN. But then again, so would you and I, right? So, I mean, look. It's not saying a lot. I think I have great respect for these guys and everything that they've accomplished. But things do run their course. And ultimately, I think the NBA would be better served at this point by maybe having something different on the finals next year. Because if we get to the NBA finals next year and Chuck is ignoring what's going on the court to rail against the Lakers, or Shaq is insulting the best big man on the team for not being as good as he was, or God forbid that you got Draymond there working through whatever beefs he has with players in the league, I mean, the NBA cannot deal with getting that from its blue chip flagship partners.
I certainly agree with you on that. Draymond during the playoffs last year, that was embarrassing.
Yeah, it was.
That was very, and you wanted him at some point to just no longer even be on television. It was that bad.
Draymond is extremely naturally talented. He is a genuine natural talent. He chooses to use his platform to act out his various issues with players in the league or whatever angle he has, and he disguises cheap shots as honesty. Draymond can be a good analyst, but he has a lot of work to do to get there. Right now, we've talked about a half hour here just on the NBA. Just a lot underlying the NBA coverage this year from within the league and outside of the league. Really, the ultimate takeaway is there is a toxic level of negativity surrounding the NBA that the quality of the game does not seem to justify. Like, the NBA right now is just kind of meh, but the conversation about the NBA is very angry and very much people working out things that I don't think have anything to do with the three-point shot. So we'll leave it there and take a little bit of a swerve here to the other big event of the weekend, the Daytona 500, which, again, the rain. There is no sport more adversely affected by Mother Nature than NASCAR, just none. Not golf, not baseball. It is almost every week, it seems like, for NASCAR, and almost every year at Daytona, both in February and in August when they do the second race. So it's hard to really say what this race is capable of drawing anymore, but I'd like to think that had it been run as scheduled on Sunday, it probably would have gotten to about 8 million viewers at least. That's where it was in 22 and 23. The last 2 years it was run as scheduled. A solid audience. I mean, 6.5 million, no complaints, but the third smallest audience ever for the race, but also the highest audience for the race when it was rain impacted. That's a big caveat, since 2020. You'll take it if you're NASCAR. 6.5 million viewers to watch NASCAR is amazing. And when you add in the rain delay was the number two sporting event of the weekend. When you add in the rain delay, people were watching NASCAR from 1:30 in the afternoon to 9:30 at night at levels that nothing else on Fox, and I mean nothing, can get. All right? Armand, your thoughts on the Great American Race?
Yeah, Daytona 500s, I sort of look at it in the same category as the Indy 500. Historic events that always command a certain level of respect. But to me, you correct me if I'm wrong, John, based on the numbers that you've studied throughout the years, where it is at this point, unless you get some Danica Patrick-like figure who springs up and just takes NASCAR over by storm, this is kind of what you expect, right? Especially considering the fact that you had that delay. You don't finish on Sunday. You end up having to finish on Monday. I think 6.5 or so million viewers is about as much as you could hope for, given the circumstances. No?
Yeah. I mean, it's a solid number. I mean, at this point with NASCAR, they're starting a new deal just like the NBA is this year, so the ratings don't even really matter. Honestly, I thought the CW number for the Xfinity Series was really impressive. 1.8 million and the highest for any Xfinity Series race since 2022. The CW was airing some races last year, but they didn't do as well as that. That was a noteworthy number going forward for next year. But look, I mean, when all is said and done, as you said, you know, with a lot of these sports, the ratings just are what they are. They don't really matter. I wrote about NASCAR ratings dropping every single year for 15 years. And NASCAR's fine. Eventually, if your ratings drop for 15 straight years and everything's fine, kind of, maybe, time to stop caring too much, right? So, I mean, you'll take it. The third smallest audience on record, whatever. 9 straight hours where people were watching your sport at elevated levels. I mean, it proves NASCAR's strength. Very regional sport meeting that kind of audience. Let's switch gears to, of course, the big rating story of the weekend, the biggest one, the Four Nations face-off in hockey, the United States and Canada. 4.4 million viewers Saturday night and beat NBA All-Star Saturday night fairly handily by more than a million viewers. I know, obviously, it was on ABC and All-Star Saturday Night was on cable. But any other time you can tell me that the NHL has beaten the NBA head-to-head, I can't think of it. Not technically an NHL game, obviously, you know, but it is an NHL-sanctioned event. So a very impressive figure there. Tomorrow night, we're taping Wednesday, the final. Canada and the United States, obviously, with all the insanity going on nationally, that's a much more loaded matchup than it would have been even a year ago, and it's always somewhat heated. So, yeah, what do you think viewership-wise? I mean, 4.4 million on Saturday night on ABC. What kind of audience do we see Thursday night on ESPN?
Yeah, I was about to ask you, but to me, I love the fact that this game was on broadcast. And no matter how you slice it, John, the biggest events, you want them on broadcast. You just do, man. I don't know if you get that 4.4 number on a Saturday night with everything else that's on television, including the NBA All-Star weekend. I don't know if you get that number just on ESPN alone, man. And so this game being on ESPN, you've got some smoke behind it now. You know, like you said, we're taping on Wednesday. I know you used to do your predictions and you don't do them anymore, but what's your over-under here for this game?
Well, you know, when that number came out Saturday night, I did say on Twitter that I thought that the final would get a Stanley Cup Final Game 7 style audience, but, you know, I might have been sleep deprived when I said that. I'm not sure if it's going to get to that level. I think it's not impossible that viewership will be down from Saturday's game because it is cable, but this is, more than anything, this is the World Baseball Classic final that got, what was it, 5 million viewers, U.S., Japan, on FS1. That's kind of where this should end up. Very similar. Golden matchup, best case scenario. Superstars from your league. And it gets a big audience on cable. So I think I'm going to actually say 6 million viewers. I don't know that it's going to get there. And if it turns out to be like 3.8 million, I'm not going to be shocked. But I'll say tentatively 6 million because I might write a ratings predictions piece. I might write one. Probably won't, but I might. And I might end up with heading someplace else. But as you said, I mean, you know, look, hey, these are amazing numbers. And the National Hockey League does not draw like this typically. The season high before the Four Nations face-off was 1.27 million viewers. I mean, what are we talking about here? This is just obliterating all of those marks.
Yeah, and I love it for hockey, just a sport that it's always on my radar. I just can't get around to watching it the way I'd like to, and then the playoffs come around, and there's just another level of intensity. I just love the fact that it matters, too, and maybe that plays a part in sort of the appeal from a television standpoint, not only it being on ABC, but just sort of the physical nature. And like you said, some of the things that are swirling around and nationally and internationally, we all are aware of that. I do think it adds some appeal and it adds some intrigue. And I think it's going to draw some eyeballs to the product that under sort of ordinary circumstances probably would not be there.
Yeah, I agree. And that broader context, I mean, it's not great for the world, but just like Les Moonves said, it's not great for America, but it's great for CBS. It's not great for the world, but it's great for the National Hockey League, what's going on right now in the broader context. Let's shift to the situation with Netflix. A couple of stories about Netflix the past week. One, they are a bidder for Formula One rights, and ESPN is not. ESPN is dropping Formula One, which really kind of just leaves the door wide open for Netflix or maybe Amazon, maybe NBC to get back in. But really the bigger story with Netflix over the past week was the podcast done by one of its executives, where this executive said that if Netflix was to have an NFL package in the next 5 years, she would want the Sunday afternoon package. Now, we're going to play this little snippet here because the context is very important. You have to hear the tone of the conversation. This has been portrayed as some kind of statement of intent by Netflix, but when you listen to it, you'll probably get the same sense that I did, which is, I don't know how seriously to take this. All right, so this is Netflix executive Bella Bajaria on the Ringer-owned podcast, The Town, hosted by Matthew Bellioni.
In 5 years, will Netflix air a weekly NFL game? And because the answer is obviously yes, which NFL package will you steal from a rival?
I say the answer is no, because the rights are already tied up.
No, but there's an opt-out in less than 5 years.
If the answer is yes, then I definitely want the Sunday night game, the Sunday games.
The Sunday game. No, you mean the Sunday afternoon or the Sunday night football game?
Afternoon.
Afternoon. Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, ultimately, I don't get from that any firm commitment by Netflix to pursue a Sunday afternoon NFL package, but certainly it would be a major shift. The NFL Sunday afternoon games have always been on broadcast television, but you have to wonder how much longer that will last, because CBS is in a very odd state, and, you know, Fox really, Murdoch only cares about Fox News. He does not care about anything else. And as time goes on, you're going to have to really give some serious thought to whether or not Fox really is bigger than Amazon or Netflix. We know that it isn't. And the same applies for the Tiffany Network over at CBS as well. Armand, your thoughts?
Yeah, you knew what was going to happen with a quote like this, right? I mean, if people hear it, it's going to get aggregated and it's going to get twisted and perverted and the whole nine. So not surprised that this one made the kind of waves it made. I think it's more so something just to put a bookmark in, and in the next couple of years, because we know there's every source, every person I've heard from about this, including, you know, the two of us on this podcast, we believe the NFL is going to pull out. Is it 2029 or 2030, John?
2030 for ESPN. ESPN's opt-out is the leader.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, everyone believes that NFL is going to explore that halfway period of the new rights agreements and see what else is out there. And who knows? I mean, I can't pretend to know what the landscape is going to look like in 4 or 5 years. I didn't know that we would this rapidly have Christmas Day games on Netflix, and not only have them, but have 20 plus million people watching. I didn't know that Amazon would be in its third year and become really now just sort of a regular part of the NFL viewing experience. So time changes and things change very quickly, and who knows what's going to happen in that time frame. But the comment, as I guess sort of as much as it has stirred people up, it's something that I just sort of say, okay, I'll store that one away. And in a few years, let's come back to it and see what the landscape looks like. Because as we know, the NFL is always going to go where the money is. And the money will definitely be there from Netflix and Amazon and from all of the big players. I'm sure Apple could be involved as well. There's nothing that would cause me to believe they wouldn't be in a few years. And so, I mean, just store it away and let's see what happens. But obviously, we know that streaming is the future, and in some ways, streaming is the present. I will say the broadcast networks, I think they really need to just keep a hand on the NFL if they can keep it. We've seen what happened in the past when CBS lost the NFL back in 93, 94, and what it did to them. And Fox has had the NFL for 30-plus straight years now. But who knows what's going to happen in the future? I can't put a confident statement together about it one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, look, let's be real. 2040 is in 15 years. I have no idea what anything will look like, certainly in the industry, but even geopolitically, right? You think about 15 years, 1995 to 2010 was 15 years, and I am sorry, but those are completely different eras of American life. So 2025 to 2040, it's going to be, I have no idea, right? And, you know, obviously we're talking about 2030, but I'm thinking in 15-year terms here, because by 2040, I don't know that the Fox Broadcast Network exists. Murdoch can't still be around in 2040. You know, I'm not trying to be morbid, but he's over 90 years old. We don't really know what's going to happen with the family transition. All of this with Murdoch, all of it, has just been his personal desire to shape the world. And he has obviously succeeded beyond his wildest dreams. But that's what all of it was. To me, I look at Fox in particular. I think they're really at a very interesting point, right? Because once Rupert is no longer with us, and depending on the succession plan, I just straight up don't know if that network exists. And of course, for CBS, all of this stuff going on right now with the regulation, I don't really know how that's going to play out. And so I don't really know what CBS's future is. And so I'd much rather be in business with Amazon and Netflix. I feel like they're going to be around in 2040. I don't feel that Fox, I don't think Fox is going to be around in 2040 in any capacity, unless Lachlan Murdoch succeeds his father. And as far as CBS goes, I mean, I really don't know what's going to happen to CBS in the immediate near term, not even in a 15-year window. So a lot of uncertainty ahead.
All I can say is this. If you are a sports fan, you better have a second job. Because these leagues are going to be in your wallet pretty heavily. We've seen Amazon. They are fully committed here. You're going to have major NBA playoff games on Amazon moving forward. NFL has got Thursday Night Football and playoff game every year now. You've got Netflix involved, and there's no reason to believe that that's not going to continue. At least the holiday specials or some sort of special contest. Peacock had a game, and so you just better make sure you've got some money stored away for a rainy day or a rainy few months, because the NFL is going to see to it, the NFL in particular, is going to see to it that you are spending your money in a multitude of places.
Indeed, and that is where we will leave things off. Just a quick note before we go. Joe Buck returning to Major League Baseball for the first time since leaving Fox on the Brewers-Yankees opening day game. Could be one of the last opening days for ESPN, depending on how that goes. We talked about that last week. We'll talk more about all of the topics going on in the industry when we're back on the SMW podcast. But in the meantime, thank you, Armand, as always, and thank you all for listening.